Peace be upon you, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a new episode of Islam in Focus. I am Muhammad Hosni, and I will be acting as your host on today's program. We have been promising you for several weeks now a series of episodes dealing with the fundamental teachings and tenets of Islam, and I am happy to announce to you today that today's program will be the first in that series. With us today is Dr. Gamal Badawi, professor at St. Mary's University, and he will help us to elucidate some of the basic concepts and maybe define some of the fundamental terminology that will be necessary prerequisite for any reasonable understanding of the wealth of ideas comprised in Islam. Dr. Gamal, welcome to our program. And I think the best point to start at is the extent of the Muslim presence in the world, and whether every Muslim is an Arab and every Arab is a Muslim, as a lot of people may tend to believe.
See, the whole notion of a Muslim being an Arab in long flowing robes of a camel or horse is a kind of a stereotype that seems to have been deliberately perpetrated by the media. Not only by the media, but even some of the more respectable writing seem somehow to imply this kind of a stereotype. Indeed, you'd be surprised to know that Muslims, the Arab section of Muslims, in fact, constitute a small minority among Muslims. Mm-hmm. In other words, the Muslims who are Arabs at the same time constitute nearly 15%. That's almost 1/7 of the total world population, or Muslim population, I should say. In fact, the reverse also is true, that not every Arab is a Muslim. In other words, there are many Arabs also who are Christians or Jews and have been for years living in Arab countries. So this is, like I said, it's a kind of false stereotype that is normally associated with everything from Popeye the Sailor Man to cartoons and papers to writings. It's not a true picture. Indeed, the total Muslim world population gets quite close to 1 billion. There are various estimates. Some are somewhat underestimated. One recent issue of the Time magazine estimated the total Muslims all over the world as 750 million. Mm-hmm. There are other studies that show it's actually closer to 1 billion Muslims all over the world. But in any case, that would place it either as the largest faith, universal faith on earth, or at least a close second, because according to the same Time issue, it estimates the total number of followers of Christianity with various sects, Protestantism, Catholicism, and Eastern Orthodox, and all others, combined at 985 million. So that, like I said, puts Islam either the largest faith, if you take 1 billion as the estimate, or a close second, really. So it's a universal religion, really, rather than something that's necessarily connected with the Arabs. You might, I might give you some examples of places where people only hear about when news breaks about. Most people would think of Muslims, if not only limited to the Arabs, as mainly concentrated in African or Asian countries. Of course, in combined Asia and Africa, they should be close to 700 million Muslims, and definitely this is the largest concentration. But on the other hand, there are also many places in the world where Muslims have even a majority outside of Asia and Africa.
Can you give some examples?
Yes, for example, in Europe, Turkey is close to 98 or 99% Muslim. Albania, which is now under communist occupation, estimated even according to the Time magazine, some people even would place the estimate at higher than that, but according to the Time estimate, there is about 70% of the total population in Albania are Muslims. There have been several reports also relatively recently showing that on Europe as a whole, on the continental level, Muslims constitute the second largest religion in Europe, or faith followed in Europe. Besides this, of course, and this might explain sometimes the discrepancy between the estimates, there are many places where Muslims constitute a substantial minority also. In Russia, for example, after the Russian invasion of Afghanistan, many questions have been raised about the effect of that Islamic revival on the Muslim population under Russian occupation, which are estimated now at about 50 million Muslims. That's almost 25% of the total Soviet Union, in China there's at least 20 million, perhaps more than that. In India, even though Muslims are a minority, they're a substantial minority of 80 million. In addition, of course, to Muslim presence in considerable minorities in places like the Philippines, in North America, even to some extent, there's presence which is growing many other places in the world. In fact, to reflect or show the universality of Islam as a universal faith, there's nearly 120 different countries in the world or more which has Muslims as either minority or majority. In 57, roughly, 57 countries, the Muslims constitute a substantial majority of the population. So the notion, like I said, basically,
sure, a lot of people would find it very strange to believe that a place like Russia has 50 million Muslims, whereas Egypt, that's considered an Islamic country through and through, has less than that.
Right.
Okay, having established that not every Arab is a Muslim, not every Muslim is an Arab, maybe we should move to the following point, the following misconception, which is Islam being always talked about as a religion, like Christianity is a religion, Judaism is a religion, or any other of the religions of the world. And then the problem of sacred versus secular, which is almost becoming a proverbial dichotomy, and whether this dichotomy really exists in Islam at all.
You see, the whole notion of so-called sacred versus secular is something that stemmed largely in Western thinking. And for most people in the West, when you mention the word religion, it's automatically tied in their minds with the ritualistic or spiritual aspect of life, something just of acts of worship. And according to this, this seemed to be an implication that life is compartmentalized in two major components.
Right.
One component is sacred or religious, the other is secular.
Okay,
the religious part concerns itself mainly with the spiritual and moral aspects of life, the personal relationship between the person and the creator, while the secular aspect is everything else. That is everything that does not fall within the boundaries of this very limited definition of what religion is would fall under the secular, and that such religion does not really play a very significant role as a regulatory force in the social, economic, or political life of the individual. The Muslim find that kind of dichotomy unacceptable and quite inconsistent, in fact, with the nature of Islam as the Muslim understand it. At least there are three basic reasons for that.
Mm-hmm.
On the etymological level, the word itself, religion, in the Western dictionary, if you get the equivalent of that in Arabic, it's the word millah, really, not deen as we use it in the Arabic.
It's not the word we use for Islam.
Exactly, we don't use it for that. It means simply, you know, something which is limited and ritualistic. But the actual word used for quote-unquote religion, as again a broader term, is deen in Arabic, D-E-E-N, which means a way or a way of life. And as such,
it doesn't really have an exact word in English, right?
No, I don't think that there's any single English word really that would convey the total meaning or totality
of it. Right. Yeah.
And that's why I have some reservation about they use the term religion to refer to Islam, because the religion is connotated in the minds of most Western audience with its limited conception. But like I said, if I may put it in more than one word, as a way of life, a total guidance in life, then it follows from that that there is no compartmentalization, that there is no separation between religious and secular, or sacred and secular, because you could worship God in a way by following his commands and way of life in your socio-economic political life that people call secular, and you can also conduct the so-called secular activities according to the injunctions and broad guidance that is provided by revelation. This is one thing. The second major area, of course, that reflect on this dichotomy is that historically speaking, the development of Muslim civilization has been quite different than what happened in the West. For example, in the case of Islam, the more people were sincere in the application of their faith in the various facets of their lives, the more they had material progress and civilization,
prosperity.
In prosperity. Yeah. The more they deviated from the pristine teachings of their faith, the more they became backwards.
Yeah.
In other words, there was a complete harmonious correspondence between following the precepts of the faith as a total way of life and progress and civilization,
mm-hmm.
and the reverse is true. And this, of course, stands in contrast to what happened, for example, in Europe, where the trend actually was reversed.
It was exactly the opposite.
It was exactly the opposite.
That's right.
That's why it is very important for students of Islam, especially if they don't have, you know, the Islamic background, or they don't really have the commitment, not to try to interpret Islam and put it in the Western frame of reference. They have to interpret Islam as it is.
So called separation of church and state.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is totally irrelevant, really, in the mind of the Muslim altogether.
Mm-hmm. Good. So at this point, we have cleared up exactly where the Muslims are in the world, whether all Muslims are Arabs or not. And we have cleared the misconception, the common misconception, that Islam is just another religion, mm-hmm. and that secular and sacred should be dichotomized, should be separated in Islam like in any other faith or any other religion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a lot of the literature about Islam, some of the most notable references in our university libraries about Islam
call it no basis whatsoever of that term Mohammedanism as derived, let's say, from the scriptures of Islam, or the saying of the Prophet, or the name even used by Muslims. They never refer to that, so the title is baseless.
Mm-hmm.
But from the several years of the history of Muslims, they have been using also the term Islam rather than Mohammedanism. So this is another reason. Why replace the authentic term with some alien term that comes from a different frame of mind? A third reason is that when you use the term Mohammedanism, given the fact that many other faiths in the world also derive their names from people who are regarded by some as their founders, it also gives a kind of false impression, either that Muhammad is worshipped by Muslims, if you compare it, for example, with the title Christianity,
yeah.
or the least is that Islam has its center really as a person, not as a principle, Muhammad, not to be derived from God himself, but rather founded by Muhammad.
Like Buddhism, for instance.
Like Buddhism.
Yeah.
In fact, in some of the references, including the one that you refer to, there is this tendency to talk about Muhammad founded Islam in such and such year.
Yeah.
Islam was founded in the 7th century by a man called Muhammad. This, to the Muslim, is a very inaccurate and offensive way, really, of putting Islam, because it depicts a great prophet as an imposter, because the prophet has indicated that what he's teaching is a revelation that he received from God. But to say he founded, we're just talking as if somebody sit down and concocts some existing revelation or scriptures and come and tell people that, you know, here I come, I am a prophet of God.
Mm-hmm.
So the question of, again, impression, the false impression of Muhammad being the founder. For the Muslim, the founder of Islam is God himself. It is the direct revelation, just as God has given his word and revelation to previous prophets before Muhammad. The fourth and final reason, that again, when you use the term Mohammedanism, you tend to undermine the universality of Islam. I have referred briefly also to this universality when talking about the population of Muslims. It's extended all the way from Indonesia to Morocco, from Europe to South Africa. By using or relating Islam specifically to one person, as if only the followers of Muhammad or people who are, like I said, associated with the stereotype Arab are the Muslims, whereas to the Muslim, Islam is the same basic doctrine preached by all prophets throughout history, Muhammad being only the last prophet and messenger of God with the universal message to the entire humanity.
Now, could you define to us the word Islam itself? In other terms, from what you have been telling us, you've been talking about the universality of Islam and what Islam is not. Maybe now you should give us, and you said that Islam appeared in the Quran, in the holy book of the Muslims.
Yes,
could you give us the etymological word of the meaning of
okay.
the word?
Etymologically speaking, Islam is a term that connotates two things, or derived from two meanings. One is salam, which means peace. The other is submission. Submission in a sense of conscious, willing submission to the will of God. In fact, the two meanings are not different, really, because putting both roots together, or both meanings, I should say, together, it follows that Islam is the attainment of peace through
submission.
The willing, willing and voluntary submission to the will of God. In that sense, then, when we talk about peace here, we're talking both about inner peace, internal peace within the individual, and peace from without. And it is important also to indicate here that when we talk about willing submission, that we're talking about a submission which is not just lip service, but rather a submission that manifests itself in the actual life and the deeds of the individual. Right. In other words, it manifests itself in the love of God, in following the commandments and the injunctions that has been given by Him. In that sense, you could say that Islam, among all other faiths that I'm familiar with, is the only one really that has a clearly attributive title. That is a title that summarizes its nature.
Almost the whole faith in one word.
Exactly, you can summarize the whole faith in one word, rather than as common in the names of many faiths, which, by the way, are sometimes names given also by outsiders rather than original names, you know.
Yeah.
But many other faiths, especially world faiths, the major ones, the names could be derived either from the name of a person who was believed to be the preacher,
or of a place,
or a particular locality, or geographic limitation, whereas the nature of Islam is a lot more universal as the total and complete message to the entire mankind. For that reason, like I said, the word Islam perhaps is the proper term to use.
Uh-huh. And just as a parenthetically at this point, when we say submission, we don't really mean submission in the negative sense. It's sort of a positive submission, if the word can make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now having defined the word Islam, maybe the next logical step would be to define a Muslim. Who is a Muslim? Who can be considered a Muslim and who cannot be considered a Muslim?
Well, again, you can define it on different levels.
Yeah.
In one sense, if you take the exact term Islam in a sense of submission,
yeah,
it follows also that there are many other creatures, animate and inanimate, who are regarded as Muslims in a sense of submitting themselves to the will of God.
Mm-hmm.
Even a person who is defying the law of God, who is defying the teachings of God, in a way, he submits to God in one level, at least insofar as the biological function or various aspects of his life or her life, which are beyond his or her control. In other words, etymologically, strictly speaking, you can say that the sun, the moon, the oceans, the vegetations are Muslims, that they submit to the laws which are devised by Allah, by God in nature. So in that sense, you could say the whole universe willingly or unwillingly submit to the laws of God. But on the second level, and this is perhaps the more important one, that like we were talking before, the submission has to be a willing submission, a commitment that the person makes, which means that there are also some aspects in our lives which we had some control on, we had some free will. Which means that there are also some aspects in our lives which we had some control on, we had some free will.